What I thought we'd do this evening is think about a mother. I thought that was appropriate given that today is Mother's Day, and I want to spend time thinking with you about a mother. I got two very short readings. The first is in John chapter 2, and it's the first verse. It says, "And the third day, there was a marriage in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there." Now, the second reading is much later in John's Gospel. It's in chapter 19, and it's verse 25. And I just want to read the opening clause. "Now, there stood by the cross of Jesus, his mother." You know, there have been many notable mothers throughout human history. And the biblical record is also replete with many notable mothers. For example, what about the first mother? Adam named Eve because she was the mother of all living. Now, that's a title that cannot belong to anyone else. The Population Research Bureau in 2019 estimated that there have been 108 billion people that have lived on this planet. Now, you may take that figure with a pinch of salt, because they also reckon that man has been here for 50,000 years. I'd much rather think about 6,000 years. But whatever the figure is, it will be multiple of billions. And Eve was the mother of them all. You know, sadly, the very first son that Eve produced turned out to be a murderer. This evening, I don't want to think about Eve, although I do want to think about one who was the seed of the woman. If the world's population was 108 billion, we could safely assume that 50 billion of them would have been female, at least 50 billion. But whatever the figure is, there is only one woman, fellow saint, only one that can bear the title, the mother of Jesus. And three times in the New Testament, Mary is simply called the mother of Jesus. She's called it twice in John chapter 2, and she's called it once in Acts chapter 1. Whereas Eve's first son took life, Mary's firstborn son had not come to destroy men's lives. He said, "I am come that they might have life." Now, during the time the Lord was on earth, there were many that spent much time with him. But no one spent more time with him than Mary. Mary was there the day that he was born. And in Luke chapter 2, we read that she brought forth her firstborn son. But Mary was not only there the day he was born. Mary was there the day he died. And we read in John 19, "Now there stood by the cross of Jesus." She was there at the beginning. She was there at the end. There was a Joseph at the beginning. And there was a Joseph at the end. But you know, and I know, that it was two entirely different Josephs. The Joseph at the beginning was a carpenter. that Joseph at the end was a counselor. Now, both men are called just. But the Joseph that was at Bethlehem was not at Calvary. And the Joseph that was at Calvary was not at Bethlehem. But Mary, she was at both places. You know, I've often mused and meditated upon the comparisons and contrasts between the day that Jesus was born and the day he died. You know, the first hands that touched him was a woman's hands. The last hands to touch him ere he died, they were wicked hands. The day that he was born, Mary clothed her son. Scripture says that she wrapped him in swaddling bands. The day he died, Mary saw that men had stripped her son and they gambled over his clothing. On the day he was born, Mary laid him down. The scripture says she laid him in a manger. The day he died, Mary watched as men lifted him up. The day he was born, Mary saw shepherds. The day he died, Mary saw soldiers. The day that Jesus was born, darkness was turned to light. The day that Jesus died, light was changed to darkness. You know, fellow saint, 30-something years after he was born, Mary was there to see his first miracle. She was there in John 2. And we know that when he performed that miracle, that the gospel record tells us that he manifested forth his glory. And Mary was there to see the manifestation of his glory. The day he died, Mary was there to see his grief. You know, fellow saint, if you go back to Exodus chapter 1, yeah, you've got the situation where Moses is born into captivity. In Exodus chapter 1, you read about two women, Shifra and Pua. Shifra and Pua are midwives. They were there to help the Hebrew women give birth to their children. Now, the Bible doesn't tell us how old Mary was when Jesus was born, and therefore we have to be very careful. But a little bit of research would seem to indicate there is a strong probability that when Jesus was born, Mary would have been in her mid-teens. Now, that might seem unsavory to us in the 21st century. That might not seem to be appropriate to us of a Western culture. But we have to remember that we're now going back 2,000 years. And we need to leave Western culture behind and come to an Oriental culture. And it is quite possible that when Jesus was born, Mary was but in her teens. But unlike Jochebed in Exodus 2, there was no midwife for Mary. We read, fellow saint, that she was out in some Judean field with none to help her. The only one present at that moment was a carpenter, and I doubt if he knew much about delivering children. And so the Bible record simply states this: she brought forth her firstborn son. Have you ever pondered that moment, fellow saint? That moment when she brought forth her firstborn son, here is one who the heaven of heavens cannot contain. And yet for the last 9 months, he has been concealed within the womb of a virgin. And when at last she brought him forth, she, as any mother would have clasped that son to her. And yet, fellow saint, as she nursed and caressed that newborn child, simultaneously, he was holding every atom of the universe in its absolute right order and right place. For by him, all things consist. And that moment when she brought forth her firstborn son, and I speak with due care, she's looking down on a few pounds of human flesh. And yet, she is looking down on one who is the image of the invisible God. And here now, the one who John opens his gospel and tells us was with God, now at this moment when she brings him forth, he's now dwelling among us. All the wonder of it. You know, in recent weeks, I've been having a brief look at Hebrews chapter 9. Hebrews chapter 2, verse 9. And in Hebrews 2, verse 9, we read, "But we see Jesus, who was made a little lower than the angels." And the saints in Caerphilly will have heard me reference in this a week past today. The word "little" there, it can mean for a little time, but that, I don't believe, is what the writer is emphasizing. He's not talking about time. He is talking about position. And he tells us that Jesus was made a little inferior to angels. Now, the writer then tells us why. He was made a little lower, a little inferior. There's nothing wrong with that translation. He was made a little inferior to angels. For what reason? For the suffering of death. Fellow saint, when I was born in 1950, I was born that I might live. But out in that Judean field that day was born a wee child that he might die. He was made a little lower than the angels for the suffering of death. Now, I wouldn't want anyone to think that I am detracting from who the Lord was while he was here. Fellow saint, there was no diminution in his coming into humanity. His essential being was not in any way undermined. But he had two distinct natures. He was both simultaneously divine and human. And Wesley got it right, didn't he? When penning what we refer to as a carol, he said, "Veiled in flesh, the Godhead see. Hail the incarnate deity." You know, I've quoted this verse before on one of these sessions, the words of Josiah Conder in his hymn. And in one of the verses, I think it's the third verse, he says, "True image of the infinite, whose essence is concealed, brightness of uncreated light, the heart of God revealed. The wonder, fellow saint, the wonder of that moment when she brought forth her firstborn son. Now we read the opening words of John 19, verse 25. And in our good authorized version, the verse opens with the word now. But several translations open the verse with the word but. And what we have introduced in John 19, verse 25 is a contrast. And let me just point out a few contrasts against the backdrop of the opening phrase of that verse. You see, when Mary stood, what were soldiers doing? When Mary stood by the cross, soldiers were sitting. Sitting down, they watched him there. Sitting down, they kept watch, is the idea. But while soldiers sat, Mary stood. You know, fellow saint, when Jesus was born, Mary was in an outside place. We often refer to the incident with the inn. There was no room for him in the inn, but you will know that the Bible doesn't say that. Bible doesn't say that. It says there were no room for them. But the point is that Mary was in an outside place and in all probability in a field, a Judean field, an outside place. She was outside of Bethlehem. When Jesus died, she was in an outside place, not outside Bethlehem now, but outside Jerusalem. Says the hymn, there is a green hill. Don't know if it really was, but that doesn't matter for now. There is a green hill far away without a city wall. We know, fellow saint, from the writer to the Hebrews, he was without the gate. And the day he was born, Mary was in an outside place. And so too, the day he died. But while soldiers sat, she stood. Now, it is said of some at Calvary, they passed by. Not Mary. It says she stood by. The centurion stood over against. That means opposite the cross. Mary didn't stand opposite. Mary stood alongside. You know, it is said of some women. In Mark 15, they followed afar off. But Mary stood by. What about the disciples? Well, I know that John came back. But what about the disciples? Well, we read, fellow saint, that they all forsook him and fled. And in contrast to all the disciples, we read, but Mary stood by. You know, that day, that morning, fellow saint, four people were pierced at Calvary. Three men and a woman. The three men were pierced by nails. The woman was pierced by a sword. The three men were pierced through their hands and their feet. The woman was pierced through her soul. And you know, I wonder, as Mary stood at that cross, did her mind go back 33 years when she's cradling her infant son, her newborn, barely but a few days old? She carries him into the temple. There she meets Simon. That day Simon said to her, "Yea, a sword shall pierce thine own soul also." You know, I have reason to believe that Mary knew what suffering was. The fact that there is no Joseph mentioned at Calvary would seem to indicate to me that maybe by now Joseph was dead. The fact that Jesus commits Mary to John would seem to verify the fact that by now Mary was a widow. Now, if Jesus was born when she was in her mid-teens, by the time he died, by the time you get to Calvary, she would have been in her late 40s. She's a widow. And in addition to Jesus, according to Matthew 13:55, if we take it at face value, she had at least six other children, four sons, and a minimum of two daughters. Her husband's dead. She's a large family. There's no social security. I think Mary knew a lot about suffering and sorrow. But there's a realm of suffering, fellow saint, that surpasses it all. You know, those of us who are parents, we enjoy it, don't we? Let's be honest. It's nice as parents when you hear your children well spoken of. When people come and they speak well and in a praiseworthy manner about your own children. I want to tell you that Mary, on more than one occasion, had to endure great sorrow. Can you imagine being a young mother? Your baby is what? Maybe a year old? Maybe 18 months old? And you have to flee with your baby because somebody wants to kill him. Now, you mothers that are listening to me, can you imagine that? What about the home? What sorrow there must have been for Mary as a mother to watch that family growing and knowing that none of Jesus's brothers believed him. The sadness of that. Can you imagine, fellow saint, what it was to Mary when Jesus came to Nazareth? Now, bear in mind, that's where he had been brought up. As Jack Hay was telling us last night, he became known as Jesus of Nazareth. I believe I'm right in saying that 17 times he's called Jesus of Nazareth. And he comes to his hometown. What are they going to do with him? Their intent is to take him to the brow of the hill on which the city was built and to cast him headlong. The grief that must have been Mary's, fellow saint, but none of it compares to the agony and the grief that was hers. As that day she stood at the foot of the cross, and she sees her own son, bloodstained and spittle-drenched, reviled and hated. Fellow saint, what grief must have been Mary's, and yet she stood. She stood by. she stood by the cross. My time is up. Let me just close with one other thought. When Jesus was born, there was no home for him. There was no room, neither for Mary, nor Joseph, nor Jesus. But ere he died, he made sure there was a home for Mary. And he commits Mary to the care of John. And I love to think, you know, that when John came home from a day's fishing, in the days when he was doing that, and the meal was over and they'd sat down, I know the hymn wasn't written then, but I can well imagine if it had been that John would be singing, "More about Jesus would I know." And with great fervor, he would have sung, "More, more about Jesus. Tell me more about Jesus." And I love to think, you know, that many an hour, John said to Mary, "Mary, tell me more about him." And she could tell him, fellow saint, things that you and I don't know, because there's hardly anything recorded of the first 30 years of his life. And maybe that's the reason that when John winds up his gospel record, he says, you know, and I'm paraphrasing you, there were many other things which Jesus did, which if they should be written every one, I suppose the world itself could not contain the books that should be written. No way would John have known about that. Well, I have no doubt in my own mind that one source was in that home. "Mary, tell me about him." With this, I close. I want to think of two events, both of which lasted 3 days, that were separated by about 21 years. Each event was of 3 days' duration. And I have no doubt that on both occasions, and I'm told in relation to the first of them that this is true, I have no doubt that in those 3 days, Mary was sorrowing. Now, in the first of those 3 days, while Mary was sorrowing, Jesus was in the temple. I'm thinking about the incident of when he was 12 years of age. For 3 days, she neither saw him nor heard him. And she said to him, "Thy father and I have sought thee sorrowing." The second time of 3 days, I wouldn't doubt that Mary sorrowed. But while she was sorrowing, Jesus was in the tomb. Now, on the third of those days, John and Peter go to the tomb. And they look in, and John observes the way that the clothes are lying. And John knew from the way that those clothes were lying, those grave clothes, he knew that Jesus was alive. Where does John go? Well, in fact, the Bible tells us both John and Peter, they went to their own homes. And I have no doubt, fellow saint, that John went back to his own home and he opened the door and he said, "Mary, he's alive." To borrow the words of 1 Corinthians 15, "Now is Christ risen from the dead." I've not talked about Mary tonight, fellow saint, that you might worship her. She was highly favored. She was blessed among women. She had the privilege, the only woman who's ever lived that had the privilege of being called the mother of Jesus. But I've not talked to you tonight about Mary that you might worship him, but rather that you and I might be like wise men of old who, when they came into the house, they saw the young child and Mary his mother, and they worshipped him.